Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
And welcome, everybody. I'm here with my co-host, Matt Kritzberg. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Pretty good. About yourself?
Really good. My son's marching band came in first overall at a competition on Saturday. What? Go East Paulding.
Glad somebody in Georgia's winning something.
Yes. All right. We've actually got quite a bit to talk about here, surprisingly. Fun thing happened yesterday. The Premier 12 tournament that's going on. This is actually an Olympic qualifier. The baseball is returning to the Olympics in 2020 for the first time in 12 years. So they're having to go through a whole new qualifying process. So far, the teams that are in, there's only going to be six teams that are going to be playing. So far, Japan is in as an automatic qualifier because they're hosting for Tokyo in 2020. And then Team Israel managed to qualify, winning the Europe-Africa tournament that happened in September. So this is the first opportunity for Team USA to try to qualify. And guess who's on that team?
Drew Waters.
Wow, you got it in one.
Hey. But he's not the only Braves connected player on the team. Of course, the second one might take a little deeper dive to guess who that is.
Yeah, I'm lost. Who you got?
Caleb Teelbar. He's actually on Team USA, who is a reliever for Gwinnett for the last month of the season, but he is on Team USA.
All right. Well, we're all hopefully rooting for Teelbar and also that Waters kid, too. He did something kind of special in that first game. First pitch of the first game, boink, out. Matt, I saw you posted on Twitter about it, that that home run probably would have gone to the wall or maybe died at the wall if it'd been in Mississippi.
Yeah, there were several. I saw several occasions last season where he would kind of sit there and admire a pitch that was heading towards the wall. Or at times he would speed out of the box as well. But balls that should obviously be out of many parks around the country, they would just die off the wall or hit the wall to where either it was an out or he might be able to get extra bases out of it. But I'm sure he was happy to see a ball that he got all of like that actually go over a wall.
Yeah, it was a laser beam. Yeah, so Team USA ended up just absolutely crushing the Netherlands in that game. So they're off to a good start. They got a big game coming up against Mexico. Now, this team, Team USA, it doesn't have anybody on it that's on a 40-man roster. So it's mostly minor leaguers, but the minor leaguers on there are pretty good. You had Joe Adell, who also homered. You had Brent Rooker out of the Twins organization. He homered. And then I think I saw Alec Baum make a big defensive play out of the Phillies organization. So they've got some talent there. And they've got some major leaguers, too, and some older minor leaguers. I think I saw Clayton Richard close that game out, interestingly enough.
Yeah, and Eric Kratz is on there as a catcher. I mean, he's probably the most veteran guy of the group. But I saw there's seven top 100 pipeline prospects on the team, including there's also Dalton Varsho of the Diamondbacks, Xavier Edwards of San Diego. So there's some real talent on this team. And I'm sure it was probably a little demoralizing to the pitcher for the Netherlands yesterday after Waters hit his home run. Joe Adell comes up right behind him and does the same thing.
Nice. All right. So let's hope that Team USA is able to go ahead and get us qualified. We did okay in the Olympics in the 5 years that it was part in the modern day. I think we got one gold and a couple bronze, but Team Cuba usually cleaned up during that era. Team Cuba is obviously not nearly the squad that it was back then. They just got hammered by defections and whatnot. So if they can get in, Team USA could make some noise in the Olympics.
Yeah, and there's a couple other Braves-connected players in this particular tournament as well. In fact, they faced one of them yesterday. One of Drew Waters' teammates from Mississippi is on the Netherlands team from this past season. Ray Patrick Ditter is their shortstop. And he went 0-for-1 yesterday. And I believe the Netherlands, when they have their game this evening, Jair Jurgens will be pitching for them.
Nice. Yeah, so Obviously, Jair Jurgens from Curaçao, which is a former Dutch colony, and Ray Patrick Ditter from Aruba, which was a former Dutch colony. So that's why they are with the Netherlands.
This podcast is educational in more ways than one.
Yeah, we'll become an all-Olympic podcast just on Olympic baseball. That will shorten things up quite a bit, wouldn't it?
It would.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising.
All right. Well, we did have, since the last time we had this podcast, the Arizona Fall League was starting to wrap up, and it is, in fact, now done. The Arizona Fall League ended last weekend. The Braves team did not make championship game, unfortunately, but was some kudos for one member of the Braves contingent. Again, Trey Harris just really opened some eyes in the AFL, I think, to the prospect watching community. He made second team all AFL on MLB Pipeline, which is a good honor. Matt, how did the rest of the contingent fare?
As far as the offensive on the offensive side of the ball, not great at all. Grayson Genesta, and he must have suffered some sort of injury because he didn't play much the last couple of weeks. He only ended up with a 574 OPS and struck out in basically half of his plate appearances. Garrison Schwartz, as a taxi squad player, only got 29 at-bats, but he was only 3 for 29. He had an OPS of under 400. It's not much going on there. Justin Dean started off strong and ended with a couple of pretty good games there, but not much going on there either. He hit at a 502 OPS. And offensively, there just wasn't a whole lot going on there other than Trey Harris. What strong performances they did have from the Braves contingent was on the pitching side of the ball. A couple of the guys that we really like to see do well was Connor Johnstone. And Connor Johnstone did pretty well for the Scottsdale Scorpions as well. He started six games, had an ERA of 3.27, and fared pretty well for himself. Kept everything under control, didn't let any of the games get out of hand, pitched his 3-5 innings and got out of there in pretty good shape. The guy that really stood out was Brad Roney. Finished up the year at Mississippi last year, and in eight games, he had a save. He had pitched 11 and a third innings. He had a whip of under one, and his batting average against was under one. So he was very impressive. The only thing that got him was seven walks and 11 and a third innings, but he only gave up three hits over those 11 and a third innings. So it was a very, very impressive performance for him for the Arizona Fall League. And I think we're going to see some big things out of him if he can stay healthy during the 2020 season. Now, the other guys that were in there, Daisbell Hernandez and Brandon White, neither one of those had a pretty and very good performance. Brandon White was very bad. He was in 8 2/3 innings. He had a ERA of 8.31, a whip of 2.5, and a batting average against his 3.24. So just nothing went well for him. Daisbell Hernandez, he didn't allow a lot of hits during his time, but he had just had serious control issues. He managed to keep the batting average against at 225, but he walked 10 hitters in 11 and a third innings, and you're just not going to do well as a reliever when you're walking nearly a hitter in inning. But I think it's still a good experience for him to get, and I think that's going to serve him well as he starts 2020, presumably in Mississippi.
Yeah, both Brandon White and Daisbell Hernandez, I think this gives them a very clear-eyed look at the competition they're going to face moving up to double A next year. Obviously these are essentially all-star lineups, right? I mean, they're the top prospects in baseball. So double A is not quite as bad, but it puts their mind in the right place, I think.
Yeah. And Roney, I think it really served him well that, based on this performance and how he finished up in Mississippi, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility he starts next year at Gwinnett.
And Trey Harris, he missed some of the last week there. He actually ran into the wall and missed a couple games, had to come out of a game. But he did kind of regroup and appeared in his last game and, of course, got a hit. So doesn't seem to be too serious there. Of course, thinking about Braxton Davidson last year and suffering an injury literally on the last swing of the entire AFL and missing all of 2019, you can kind of hold your breath there, but Trey Harris seems to be okay.
Yeah, and that performance, and like you said, it's gotten him a lot of attention. He's making some of the post-AFL all-star teams and look at lists from like Baseball America. But I think it's definitely put him in that next tier of prospects. Nobody's going to confuse him with Drew Waters or Christian Pache as far as potential, but he's definitely in that second group of prospects that follow him. He's definitely well into the top 30 now and probably even in well into the top 20.
I don't know, man. I saw on Twitter he could be the next Kirby Puckett.
You never know.
All right. On the day after the World Series, and congratulations to the Washington Nationals. Yeah, I mean, whatever. They had a good run. That was a really impressive playoff run for Washington. That's enough of that. All right. So the day after the World Series ended, all the free agents declared. That's Major League and Minor League. It's just worthwhile to kind of note some of the names that are now minor league free agents that were in the Braves system. So these guys are actually now free agents, and some of these we obviously want to sign back, but kind of some of the big names that we've talked about, Riley Unruh was a Rule 5 draft, minor league Rule 5 draft this past year, and really did a nice job. Still very young, only 23 years old. Would not be surprised if somebody, I wouldn't be surprised if like a rebuilding club gave him like a major league contract to stick him on a 40-man roster or something and entice him to come to them.
Yeah, if you're talking about a team like the Royals or the Tigers or the Orioles even, I mean, there's no reason not to.
Yeah, absolutely. Another guy, Dilmer Mejia, who's been with the organization a while, obviously, because he's a free agent now, but he made it up to Rome, has really done a nice job in the lower minor leagues, and was the Rome Pitcher of the Year this year for the organization, and last year was the Danville Braves Pitcher of the Year. He's actually a free agent, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with a guy with a good pedigree, again, still really young, and but hasn't advanced past A-ball. And just some other names here. Jason Hirsch, former first round pick, the all time Mississippi Braves strikeout leader, if I remember correctly.
I believe he leads the Mississippi Braves in a number of categories.
Yes. And that's obviously a mixed bag there. But Jason Hirsch, now officially a minor league free agent. Ray Patrick Ditter, who has been featured on a whole bunch of Braves prospect lists over the last several years, and just one of the premier athletes in the organization. It will be very interesting to see what comes of him.
Yeah, with his tool set, if it's not the Braves, somebody's going to definitely come calling on him.
Yeah, and then some guys that we picked up as minor league free agents last year on one-year deals, a guy we've talked about quite a bit, Claudio Custodio. It's now a free agent. Again, somebody that I think will get a lot of interest out in the market. And then some of these stripers that did really well, like Pedro Florimon, Andres Blanco, Luis Marte, who played a really good shortstop. Jack Lopez did a really nice job in the infield. And Rafi Lopez, who unfortunately got hurt early in the season and didn't play a whole lot, but good solid catcher. And then in the bullpen, Ben Rowan did a really nice job for both Gwinnett and Mississippi over the course of the year. All those guys free agents. And of course, Sean Casmar Jr., if there was anyone on this list that I would expect to be signed back, it would be him.
Yeah, I don't believe he's going anywhere. I mean, he's a great influence. I mean, he's basically the mayor of Gwinnett. So he'll be back, I imagine. But a lot of these other guys, I mean, it's just the nature of minor league baseball. You become free agent, you move on somewhere else, and there's teams that have free agents they'll be moving on to play for the Gwinnett Stripers or Mississippi Braves next season.
All right, and some other things that happened this week. We try really hard to get our prospect list out early. It's going to start rolling out actually this week. Look on outfieldflyrule.com on Thursday starting at number 50. So number 41 through 50 will be out on Thursday. But we'll talk a little bit more of that later. But we weren't the first ones out for Braves list this year. Baseball America really leapt to the prospect list stage of the offseason and started not only with their list, but actually started with the Atlanta Braves. They started in the National League East, and the Braves were the first one out of the chute. So Carlos Collazo out there for Baseball America does a great job. And I think he's a former Talking Chop contributor. I think he was the kind of point person on the Baseball America Braves list. So just quickly going through their list, Pache, Waters, Anderson, Kyle Wright, Kyle Muller, Bryce Wilson, Shea Langeliers, William Contreras, Braden Shoemake, and Tucker Davidson. Matt, obviously we haven't released our top 10 yet, but, you know, spoiler alert, that list is very close to this one. What did you think of their top 10?
Yeah, I think it mirrored ours in a number of ways. And of course, we're still writing up a lot of our prospects, but we already know who our top 50 are. And just kind of a little bit of a hint here, a little bit of preview, we matched five exactly with where the Baseball America top 10 list were. And we matched 9 out of 10 on their list, and our 10th one is barely outside the top 10. So we mirror this list pretty well, but it's a pretty obvious top 10 here. There's no real surprises on the Baseball America list, but there's one that a few spots off. But other than that, I mean, it's pretty close to where we are. I mean, it's still a very strong organization at the top here.
Absolutely. Yeah. The only one on the list that didn't make our top 10 was Tucker Davidson, and we had Tucker Davidson at 11. So, I mean, he very well could have been a top 10, I think, on any other day, right? It's kind of a snapshot in time, all these lists. So it's a good list. Obviously, we agree with a lot of it. Kind of the more interesting part to me than the list itself, they always put out these best tools in the minor leagues for all their, to go along with all their list. And it's this, that it's really kind of interesting and really kind of fun to debate. So let's do that.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So for best hitter for average here, they have Drew Waters, which is obviously, you know, pretty good. Now, Matt, you've done a good job over the course of the year, kind of telling us that about Drew Waters and his really insane BABIP, which drives a lot of that batting average. The only guy I would say as a better hitter for average possibly would be Trey Harris. And I say that because he's doing it. He actually ended up with a higher batting average than Waters. Now, that's obviously with playing against slightly less competition for most of the year. But he's done it with a lower BABIP, and he's done it with a much lower strikeout rate.
Yeah, in the case of Waters, his BABIP, like we talked about, is insane, and it was both that way at both Mississippi and Gwinnett this season. At Mississippi, his BABIP was .436, and at Gwinnett, it was .429. And then those numbers are beyond unsustainable at the major league level, so I would imagine there's some sort of reduction in those numbers next season. But he's always going to have an abnormally high BABIP just because of his approach and the fact that he's a switch hitter that can hit to all fields from both sides of the plate.
All right, moving on to the second category, best power hitter. They have Bryce Ball, which is a obviously very solid choice. The man is a monster, and the ball just jumps off his bat. The only other guy I maybe would consider here is a guy that actually had a higher isolated batting average here, and that would be Alex Jackson. Now, obviously, Jackson had the benefit of the AAA/Major League ball this year, but Bryce Ball had the advantage of pitching against much lesser competition. So if you had the choice between the two, who would you say has the best power tool?
I would say Alex Jackson has the best power tool, but if you're talking just strictly about the power tool itself, I mean, they've been preaching light tower power about Alex Jackson for years, well before he got a hold of this AAA baseball. So if you're looking strictly as a home run competition, I would think Alex Jackson would win that. But obviously, if you factor in other tools, you might consider Bryce Ball at that point.
And I'll just put in here, long term, I think Christian Pache may beat them both, which seems like an odd thing to say for a guy who hit his first professional home run last year. But the way he's developing as a hitter overall, I think his power tool might actually eclipse both of them.
And that's very possible because, and you can see the I mean, it's not just incremental progression over the last three seasons. It's been significant progression every year. So it would not be a shock to see that. And especially when you see it like his home run spray chart. I mean, he is a Deadpool hitter and he launched a number of home runs last season. I mean, you'll see the season. His ISO is just going crazy. At Mississippi, he had a 196 ISO. And for that ballpark, that's awfully good.
The next category here is best strike zone discipline. And they have here Riley Delgado. And I think they nailed this one on the head. He has really incredible bat to ball skills. He doesn't walk a lot, but he also doesn't strike out pretty much ever. He's able to put the bat head on ball almost all the time. The only other guy I maybe would consider here is Greg Cullen of Rome Braves. Again, just a terrific strike zone judgment, and he almost had more walks this year than strikeouts.
Yeah, I mean, because when you look at the top prospects in the organization, you talk about the Pache, Waters, Harris, and those guys, they strike out a pretty good bit. I think those are pretty good choices there for your number one and your number two.
And the next category, it's one that pretty much there's very little subjectiveness about it's a, because you can just time it, fastest base runner. They have Christian Pache. I assume this is correct. I assume they've actually timed him and that he's probably the fastest base runner. The only ones I could consider that maybe faster would be Justin Dean.
Yeah, and Ray Patrick Ditter could fit in there as well as far as meddling and making their way onto the platform. Pache's, it just doesn't show up as stolen bases. But if you're asking somebody first to third, second to home, nobody's going to be Pache in that category.
Yeah, and you certainly can see it in the field as well. The way he runs in the field is, you know, he's like a gazelle. Best athlete. They have here Ray Patrick Ditter, which is, I think, an excellent choice. There's certainly a lot of other contenders, however. And again, I think of Justin Dean and also Drew Waters, I think, is a good athlete. And then I'm going to reach way down into the minor leagues, a guy that I'm interested in seeing. He didn't show much with the numbers, but just athletically, I think Caden Morton should be on that list somewhere as well.
Yeah, and Michael Harris is going to end up on that list as well here in the near future.
Good call. Best fastball, they have Kyle Muller, and that certainly should be a contender. He has a fantastic fastball. I was just trying to come up with some better ones, and quite frankly, the ones I could think of, Kyle Muller, I couldn't think of actually a better starter than Kyle Muller's fastball. So everybody I have is relievers, and I have Daisville Hernandez, Victor Vodnik, and Wiskar Yinoa as far as possibly better fastballs than Kyle Muller. But Kyle Muller, I think, is above the starters, probably has the best fastball.
I think so too. Hernandez was the first one that came to mind when I was trying to think of other ones too. But Muller easily, I mean, he can hit 98 without any problem on that. His problem is just sometimes it just can't find the plate very well, but when it's on, there's not a better fastball in the organization.
And that brings us to best curveball, and they have left-hander Tucker Davidson here, and he does have a fantastic curveball. They can't really argue with it. The guys I have, I do think maybe Ian Anderson would give him a run for his money. I think maybe the difference is that I think Davidson has it kind of in his back pocket all the time, while Anderson's kind of more of a maybe this game it's on, maybe he doesn't have it this game and he has to go to other pitches kind of sort of deal. But I think when it's on, I think Anderson's curveball is as good as anybody. And yeah, I know about lack of spin rate and all that stuff. I don't care. It's a good curveball.
Yeah, but that Davidson one, especially, I mean, if you combine that with a fastball, I think his floor is as a reliever, a two-pitch reliever that on left from the left side that can do some real damage.
And then down in the rookie leagues, there's a kid that has a really good curveball too. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's on, has his name best curveball in a year or two. And that's Tyler Owens. Going on to best slider, and they give this one to Kyle Wright. Actually do kind of have a, probably this is the one I probably disagree with the most of all this. And I think that's because I'm just a big Jessiel De La Cruz fan and really like his slider. I feel like De La Cruz has his slider and is able to put it in the strike zone more often than Kyle Wright, or at least that was the case in 2019.
Now, right, when he came up in September, I mean, he's been working on it a lot during this past season, but when he came up for the Braves in September, he was flashing a 90-mile-per-hour slider at several points during his brief outings out there. But, so, I mean, he got a lot of people's attention, so I think it's going to help propel him to get some more time in Atlanta next season, but it is a definite weapon for him. May not be the best in the organization, but it is definitely a weapon.
Yeah, that is a good point. That was a fantastic couple outings there in September for Wright. It was very exciting to see. All right, best changeup, and Ian Anderson finally gets on the board here with best changeup. I actually kind of disagree with this, and this is going to be maybe a little controversial. I actually think Josh Graham has the best changeup in the organization,
and that's very possible too. His problem is he just can't get it over the plate a whole lot. He has a lot of control issues, but yeah, and Anderson's is good, but there's some room for disagreement in this category.
All right, moving on to best control, and interesting here, they have Ian Anderson again, which his control certainly improved a lot this year, and I think he's going to be a good control pitcher, but he doesn't have as good control as Bryce Wilson, I don't think.
No, I was thinking the same thing. Bryce Wilson's control is elite. I mean, he'll get hit hard sometimes, but it's not because he's walking people. He's got elite control. And even beyond that, I got another candidate here in this category, and that'd be Jeremy Walker.
Yeah, I have him down here too.
Yeah, his control was beyond elite this season. I mean, for his time in Mississippi, I believe he walked 5 hitters and nearly 60 innings of work. Anderson, he had some control issues this season. He'd go out there in some of his starts and walk 4 or 5 hitters. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the best control in the organization. That's probably the category I had the biggest disagreement on.
And the next category was best defensive catcher, and they tabbed Shea Langeliers here, which tools-wise, I absolutely agree with. He's got, I think, hands down the best defensive catching tools as far as just blocking, arm, framing, footwork, everything's working for Shea Langeliers. But I was shocked as I was pulling these numbers together. I was looking through Baseball Prospectus's catching metrics, which they have also for minor league stuff, which is really nice. And really nobody has done more in the field, I think, of catching metrics than Baseball Prospectus. And guess who the number one defensive catcher in all of AAA was?
It is Alex Jackson.
And it wasn't even close. The top AAA defensive catcher was Alex Jackson. In fact, he was the second best, according to Baseball Prospective metrics, second best defensive minor league catcher in all minor leagues, second only to former Braves prospect Joseph Oden. Remember him?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Didn't realize he was still around.
Yeah. So I can see why they chose Langeliers. I think tools wise he's there. But performance wise, Jackson just had a really outstanding year behind the plate, which is amazing considering where he was even just at the beginning of 2018. I was not convinced at all that he would be able to stick behind the plate, and he has completely turned it around. So kudos to Alex Jackson. Shea Langeliers, I'm really interested to see how he does now that he has a few months of pro experience. It's a very difficult transition for a catcher coming from college to pro, because not only are you trying to, you know, figure out hitting with wood bats and doing your, you know, all that side, you're actually also completely learning new pitchers, and you're probably calling your own games for the first time. And that is a lot to take on when you first move over. So I'm interested to see how Shea Langeliers looks after an offseason kind of immersed in with Braves pitchers.
I think that as well. I mean, and you got various catchers in the organization with various levels. I mean, you got William Contreras, who's still developing with the footwork and game calling, but has an elite arm as far as throwing out base stealers. So they're kind of on different levels of development, but it's going to be interesting to see where they're placed to start 2020 and how much time they spend at each of those levels.
All right, the next category was best defensive infielder, and they gave this one to newcomer Braden Shoemake. Now, that may be the case. I think there's a big old asterisk there in the fact that A.J. Graffanino wasn't really able to play at all in 2019. So it's obviously easy to forget about him. When healthy, though, I think AJ Graffanino is probably by far the number one best defensive infielder in the organization.
Yeah, I think it's it was a lack of competition in this category this season, like you said, with Graffanino being hurt. There weren't a whole lot of other candidates for best defensive infielder.
Now, there are some guys down in the rookie leagues that are worth keeping an eye on. I'm thinking specifically of Bo Phillip, and who was with Danville. Also a guy that caught my eye defensively, also with Danville, and he plays both short and third, Garrett Saunders, who was a non-drafted free agent signing this year. Really good glove guy, good instincts. I don't think he's not as good as Shoemake, but it'll be interesting to see if he sticks in the organization. And then with Rome, Carlos Paraguate did a really nice job. He just wasn't able to hit at all pretty much because, he's really too young for the level and was kind of rushed up.
Yeah, and he'll get a mulligan on that. I'm sure we'll see him there again at some point during the 2020 season.
Best infield arm, I think this was an easy pick, and they nailed it. Ray Patrick Ditter again. He's got a cannon, and I don't think anybody really, unless you want to count Austin Riley, since he was a prospect at the very beginning of the year, but I don't think they are counting anybody that's since graduated. So I think by default, it's Ray Patrick Ditter.
And it should tell you everything you want to know about Ray Patrick Ditter, and that the fact that you can move him to center field and not lose anything defensively. I mean, obviously he's a step down from Christian Pache in center field, but as far as losing anything off the arm and moving position, that should tell you everything you need to know, that he can use that rocket launcher out there and still be effective.
All right. And then their best defensive outfielder. This is absolutely no surprise. Christian Pache. I don't think it could be anybody else. Drew Waters is very good. Justin Dean is very good. A couple guys down in the lower minors, Michael Harris and Stephen Paolini, could possibly take this sometime in the future. But right now, it's kind of a no-brainer, Christian Pache.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not only is he the best in this organization, he's the best in a lot of minor league organizations. He's easily probably in the top five in all of minor league baseball.
Yeah, and then following that last one is best outfield arm. And that also is Christian Pache. The only ones that might give him a run for the money, I think, is the Harris boys, my cousins Trey and Michael. Both have really good arms as well. But Christian Pache, I think, again, is the easy answer here.
And I'd heard a lot about the arm coming into the season, but after getting to see him on a number of occasions in Mississippi, it's not only that he has this really strong arm, it is accurate and he makes it look easy. It's not like he's heaving a ball from center field trying to catch a runner making a break for home. It's almost like an easy type throw, like almost like a pitcher who throws 100 and you say they got some easy gas on it. He's kind of that way in center field as well.
Well, it's a 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59 automobile. It's a 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69.
All right. Well, that's a pretty good segue to, I just want to talk about maybe a couple guys that didn't quite make our top 50 list. And, Matt and I obviously made the list together. This is the second year in a row that we've made a list. I feel like this is the first time, Matt, we had some, I don't want to say disagreements, but you felt stronger about some guys than I did and vice versa. And that kind of manifested on kind of the back end of this list here. And as such of that, some guys actually ended off the list. Who are some guys that you kind of wanted on there that just you couldn't quite push them over the line?
Yeah, there's a couple of guys, couple in the pitching category and a couple in the outfield category that didn't quite make the list. Jared Johnson, 2019 draftee out of high school in Mississippi. We got Joey Estes, right-handed pitcher, and a couple outfielders, Jeremy Fernandez and Caden Morton. These are guys that just barely missed out on the list.
Yeah, and of those guys, I think Jared Johnson's probably the one that will end up. I just have a gut feeling that he's the guy that we're going to look back and go, oh, I can't believe we left Jared Johnson off that list. Just sounds like a guy with some potentially great stuff, good attitude, and coachable. good story coming out of Mississippi high school. And everything about him sounds like he could be primed for success here. So I think he would probably, he'd probably be 51. Matter of fact, now that I think about it, I think Ray Patrick Ditter is on our list, and maybe we should take him off since he's a free agent. I don't know. You want to put Jared Johnson up to 50?
We can do that. We got that kind of freedom.
Okay. You know what? All right. Hey, you know what? You audience was there and were witness to an act of compromise here where we are moving Jared Johnson on our up to 50 on our list. So, hey, that's another write-up we have to do.
We're showing some prospect flexibility here.
Well, maybe the Braves will this offseason too. All right, man. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think that will wrap it up for this show. But we've got some good things coming up here over the next few weeks. We'll have another show here in a couple weeks where we'll be pretty deep into we'll have at least our first couple of entries come out. So we'll be able to talk about those. And our next show should be right before 40-man rosters have to be locked in as far as players being added. So we'll be able to kind of make some predictions as far as who we think will be added on the list. So this isn't going to be a slow period of the year for us. We're going to keep on rolling, and we've got a few content-packed shows planned over the next few weeks.
Yeah. Do you think they'll add – I don't want to spoil it yet, but I think they may add the guy that rhymes with Christian Kache.
It's a mild possibility. I mean, it's a coin flip at this point, but only if it's a two-headed coin.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening in, and hope you guys have a great week.
And we'll see you soon.
Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. Ni le bien. Allumer le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien, non, je ne regrette rien, car ma vie.